Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and you can see us right here every single day now. I'm here to tell you something else, that after being a journalist and a news presenter at four of the biggest television networks in the United States, I kind of know what they do, and it isn't right. I believe it's time for news to be contextual and for truth-telling. And in that vein, here's what we're going to be talking about today. Truth bomb number one. What happens after we ban TikTok? What's next? And who gets to decide? Truth bomb number two. Elon Musk gets interrogated by Don Lemon. Yes, interrogated. And I'm going to show it to you. But the most frightening story out there today has to do with Boeing. It has apparently put profits before people and their safety. So says a whistleblower who's now dead. And he left a note. So I want to start by asking you a question, really. What's with this mad dash all of a sudden to cancel TikTok? Why is a social media platform suddenly the new boogeyman in the country? Okay, here's the official reason, I guess, that they're giving us. It all comes down to China, you see. Lawmakers and other government apparatchiks in places like the United States and Great Britain say that they're concerned that TikTok and its parent company, ByteDance, may be using TikTok to take our sensitive user data, like location and information, and then use it against us. Here's the problem with that. By the way, that's something that, as we have reported, is already taking place. And you know who's doing that? Our own media, social media sites here in the United States. So, you know what much of the palaver and the conversation sounds like to me when I hear some of these old guys complaining about TikTok, which usually they can't even pronounce? It kind of sounds like the utterings of dinosaurs. I mean, you take a look at the people who are wanting to take it down, TikTok. And by the way, I'm no fan of TikTok, but for what it's worth, these people who are complaining about TikTok are the same crowd that sold us the Iraq War, that lied to us about how Zelensky was winning the war in Ukraine, the same guys who take money from defense contractors left and right. And by the way, most of these people, I mean, they think that MacBook Pro is some Irish dude that they met at a bar somewhere. They're clueless when it comes to tech. Go over to Congress and talk to one of these guys. They know nothing about tech, nothing about social media. Some of them still don't even, have not even learned how to use email yet. I'm serious. There was one really smart comment, though. This one, I want to share this one with you because I think he may be onto something here. This is a guy in Ohio. He's a Republican congressman, and he says, essentially, be careful what you wish for because it may start with TikTok. Oh, yeah, we got to get rid of TikTok. But it doesn't end with TikTok.
They've described the TikTok application as a Trojan horse, but there are some of us who feel that either intentionally or unintentionally, this legislation to ban TikTok is actually a Trojan horse. Some of us are concerned that there are First Amendment implications here. Americans have the right to view information. We don't need to be protected by the government from information. Some of us just don't want the president picking which apps we can put on our phones or which websites that we can visit. We don't think that's appropriate. We also think it's dangerous to give the president that kind of power, to give him the power to decide what Americans can see on their phones and their computers. To give him that sort of discretion, we also think is dangerous.
I gotta tell you, He makes some really important points. It's an important conversation, one that we really should have in this country. While on the topic of social media, did you catch what former CNN anchor Don Lemon said on CNN? Did you catch that? Former CNN anchor said on CNN. Yeah, about Elon Musk. Here it is.
Apparently, that doesn't matter to Elon Musk. It's just for maybe talking points for him or rhetoric, because it doesn't seem to matter when it's about him, questions about him from people like me.
Yeah, he says apparently free speech doesn't really matter to him. That's what he's talking about. And then he goes on to say right here, when it comes from people like me, you see what he's doing there? Do you see what he's doing there? Doesn't that sound like somebody who went into the interview to learn and share ideas, or do you detect that it's somebody who's kind of angry? He went into the whole thing kind of angry about something. That's kind of what I'm getting from this after watching some of this interview. I'm going to share more with you. So here's what Don, who I know very well, by the way, because he and I and Lester Holt were all hired together at one point by NBC. Here's what I think he doesn't understand. There is a difference between an interview and an interrogation. Kidnappers, murderers, child molesters, those guys, you interrogate them. A business person who shares opinions with you, which you may disagree with, oh, and by the way, kind of happens to be your boss, that guy, you don't need to interrogate him. You could have a difference of opinion. You could tell him, I don't agree with you, and that's fine. But listen to the tone of this interview.
You talk about your ketamine use and depression. You also have said, and
the reason I mentioned the ketamine prescription.
I'm just going to stop for a moment. I'm going to get you back there. I'm not cutting it. But what's ketamine? Ketamine? Why is he talking about ketamine? Because it seems to me what he's doing is he's trying to conduct a confrontational interview, or better said, a hit piece. That's why. He thinks he has kind of now put him on the defensive because to Don Lemon, he's like the enemy because he has some different conservative viewpoints, for example. I mean, he could have been speaking here about Gaza or immigration or Ukraine or the budget or privacy issues, all of which need to be addressed. But what is he talking about with Elon Musk? Ketamine? By the way, I don't even know what the hell that is. So at this point, Musk, who is listening to the questions he's being asked, and he's going, okay, red flag, time to walk away, right? Probably. I don't know what he's thinking. I'm not a mind reader. But here, let's go ahead. I want you to listen to the rest of us. Let's pick this up again, Tyler, from where we left it off.
You talk about your ketamine use and depression. You also have said, and
the reason I mentioned the ketamine prescription on the X platform was because I thought maybe this is something that could help other people. Mm-hmm. That's why I mentioned it. You know, obviously, I'm not a doctor, but I would say if someone has depression issues, they should consider talking to their doctor about ketamine instead of SSRIs.
Yeah. Very civil conversation, but that is where it got very personal.
Well, it got personal, but I didn't put that out there. He has spoken very freely about his use of those are prescription drugs, but about his use of ketamine. I would not have brought it up.
He
posted it.
You see what he's doing there? You see what he's doing? He says, I didn't bring it up. He did in the past. He talked about it at some point, so that makes it fair game. So now we can talk about it. Really? I mean, sure, you can go back into LexisNexis and do a search on somebody and talk about anything that they've talked about in the past, but is that what you want to waste your time on an interview with? So after the interview, Musk essentially fired Don Lemon from Twitter and made this comment on X. Let me read it to you. Here's what he basically is saying on X. He's saying his approach was basically just CNN, but on social media, which doesn't work, that doesn't work, is what he's saying, as evidenced by the fact that CNN is dying. Those are the words. And then, true to form, by the way, what does Don Lemon do? He proves him right. So where does Don Lemon go after he gets, after he attacks Musk and after Musk fires him? He goes and appears on CNN. And there he's comfortably nestled on the set with a CNN interview who shares his exact views of the world, which is fine. You know, views like where our government agencies are all wonderful, except when a Republican is in charge, like Trump, then they're not so wonderful. Our wars are all necessary. They ignore the State Department's actions in countries all over the world. But any story having to do with discrimination, that goes right to the top. Oh, and they won't ever tell you about the political corruption that exists daily, but they will report on political corruption when some prosecutor brings them a press release and says, report on this. Essentially, they think that their view of the world is the only one that matters. And I get it. Everyone's allowed to have views. Look, I know how that works. You know why I know how that works? Because that used to be me. I used to be the guy on CNN. I used to be the guy on NBC. I used to be the guy on all of those networks. I used to be Don Lemon. But I kind of figured them out, and they fired me. and I never looked back. As for Don, poor guy, he's kind of screwed up again. And here's why I say that, okay? I'm not trying to be fair. I'm sure he's a good guy to this day. But given a wonderful opportunity in a new platform to grow himself, that he was given to grow himself and to grow his message, really, which we should all do, he does just the opposite. He seems stuck in and appears desperate for nothing more than the acceptance of the people who fired him.
Did you fly on one?
No.
You won't fly on one. Did you fly on one of these planes?
No, not really.
Of 15 workers asked randomly, 10 said they would not fly on the Dreamliner.
I wouldn't fly on one of these planes because I see the quality of the going down around here.
Those aren't workers, per se. They're pilots. Pilots being asked the question. I mean, did you hear what they said? Did you hear that what that one guy just said there at the end? Now, that's a truth bomb. Scary at that. I mean, that's a comment overheard from a pilot. This is back in 2014, by the way, which is even more timely today, what they're saying about not wanting to fly a Boeing plane. And he's essentially saying that he's afraid to fly the Boeing jet because of its shoddy maintenance and its safety reputation. Man, that's troubling. Think about it, especially considering what is happening with Boeing since this incident that I'm going to show you now, where a door flew off a plane in mid-flight.
I opened my eyes to a giant hole in the plane, and I could see the city lights.
Wow. Since then, there have been a bevy of reports filed about how the issues with planes are not the fault of airlines, but rather the fault of the airline manufacturer. Boeing eventually came clean and it copped to the problem and admitted it was their fault. But since then, the controversy has gotten even worse, with suggestions that this defense contractor has a culture problem that can't be fixed overnight. Here's the unkindest cut of all, as Shakespeare would say. This is a whistleblower. He comes in And he just levels accusations, exposes essentially the Boeing management.
I was in charge with pushing back defects to our suppliers. And what that meant was I'd take a group of inspectors and actually go to the supplier and inspect their product before they sent it in. Well, I'd taken a team of four inspectors to Spirit AeroSystems to inspect the 41 section before they sent it to Charleston. And we found 300 defects. Some of them were significant that needed engineering intervention. When I returned to Charleston, my senior manager told me that we had found too many defects and he was going to take the next trip. So the next trip he went on, he took two of my inspectors. And when they got back, they were given accolades for only finding 50 defects. So I pulled that inspector aside and I said, did Spirit really clean up their act that quick? That don't sound right. And she was mad. She said, no, said the two inspectors were given 2 hours to inspect the whole 41 section and they were kicked off the airplane.
Yeah, that's John Barnett. He's a former Boeing inspector who, after making those comments, very critical, was found dead of an apparent suicide in South Carolina. Barnett had worked at Boeing for 32 years before leaving the company in 2017. He's a whistleblower. By the way, 2017, that's when he began raising concerns about the company's safety issues. Police say that the 62-year-old just shot himself in the head and left a note, the contents of which have, by the way, not been revealed. Boeing's safety issue has become so widespread that its effect on the industry is so impactful. Kayak, have you heard of Kayak? It's that travel company. You see, they do a lot of commercials on TV. Well, they're now putting out a new feature for passengers. It's on their website, and it lets passengers know if they're about to fly on a Boeing airliner or not. They think people should know if you're going to be on a Boeing airliner. You may want to say, no, I'm not going to take this flight. I'll wait till there's one that's not a Boeing. Here's Kayak CEO Steve Hafner.
Kayak makes it easy for concerned travelers to avoid 737 MAX flights. We've increased the prominence of the MAX filter on site. Airlines do often substitute equipment, so travelers should double-check before departure.
Yeah, that's obviously somebody reading what Steve Hafner said, but there it is. I mean, they're basically putting on their website, I guess we could say it's a bit of a warning for passengers who feel like they may need it. Do they need it? When we come back, should we be concerned about flying on a Boeing jet? And how did Boeing get to this place? How did they get this sudden horrible reputation? Okay, I don't know the answers to these questions, but I know somebody who's going to give it a try, and he is very qualified. He's our next guest, Captain Dennis Tager. He is a pilot, communications committee chairman for Allied Pilots, and we're going to be right back with him in just a moment.
Decades after gaining independence from France, Côte d'Ivoire, formerly Ivory Coast, remained under the strong influence of its former metropole. Pro-French president Félix Houphouët-Boigny ruled the country for 33 years, ensuring the interests of France.
Ces premiers présidents-là, leur rôle c'était de garantir les intérêts de la France dans les anciennes colonies françaises. Les richesses de la Côte d'Ivoire, dans le sous-sol, partout, tout ce qui appartient à la Côte d'Ivoire est d'abord la propriété de la France.
After the death of Houphouët-Boigny, a new leader, Laurent Gbagbo, came to power.
Lui, ses idées, c'était de travailler d'abord au profit des populations ivoiriennes, et non au profit de la France. Or, dès que vous touchez un peu les intérêts de la France, c'est fini. Si vous ne défendez pas ses intérêts, on vous enlève vos pouvoirs.
France immediately deemed Gbagbo an enemy. A deep political crisis ensued. And Bouaké, the country's second largest city, turned into a theater of war.
C'est de là que tout est parti. Un coup d'État, le Grand Marché, les promoteurs du coup d'État ont replié vers le centre, donc Bouaké.
How did the dramatic events unfold? And how is Bouaké recovering from years of bloody conflict? Watch on RT.
I'm Rick Sanchez. Welcome back. I want to try and share with you as much information as we can gather from this situation having to do with Boeing. The guest is Captain Dennis Tager. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a pilot. He's a communications committee chairman for Allied Pilots. And I think he, too, has some concerns. So maybe we start the conversation this way, Captain. Should Americans, heck, should anybody be concerned about flying on a Boeing jet?
Well, you're a human being. You've seen all the news. And I'm a 737 captain. I've been in aviation for over three decades and served in the military prior on Boeing airplanes. I fly the 737 MAX. So, yeah, I should be concerned. You should be more concerned if these issues are happening and no one is saying anything about it. Boeing has been affirmed as failing at repairing their culture after two crashes where they put something on the airplane that they didn't inform pilots about. It was poorly designed and ended up killing 346 people. Now we leapfrog 5 years down the road, and we are looking at aircraft that are coming off the assembly line with door blowing off the Alaska flight. You know, when that happened and the door blew off the airplane, the doors blew off Boeing once again. So as a captain on this airplane, I'm demanding senior leadership at Boeing to get their act together. You know, at Boeing, when shareholders put their money in your hands, you need to treat it the way I treat it when passengers who board my airplane put their lives into my hands. Run your business like that. We can get into the details, but I just wanted to get that out there. We're as outraged as the public, but as captain on a 737 MAX and the NG, the previous model, I fly it just flew it last week. We'll fly it coming up here in the next few days. I don't get on an airplane unless I believe it's safe. But here's the difference. Right now, every time I get on the MAX in particular, my alert status is at an all-time high. And I've served in combat. So I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop with my airplane. I know I'm trained to handle it, but it's not the comfort I need when I'm trying to protect 172 people on my airplane.
Do you see a pattern? There's the suggestion that starting from the 2014, 2015, going through 2019, there was a problem with the nosedive issue, which they could have easily dealt with, but they kind of were dishonest about the way that they dealt with it. They tried to blame it on pilots like you when, in fact, it was their fault. And now we're seeing issues where apparently in these the place where they fix the plane, maintain the plane, those hangars, they're not actually doing the due diligence that they're supposed to do before that plane leaves that hangar. So that seems to be the story that I, as a journalist, am reading about. Is it correct? Do you fear it is correct?
Well, you're dead on, and you join the world, including the federal government, who has gone in, and just coincidentally, there was a deep study done on Boeing. What have you learned, and what are you doing differently since those two fatal crashes? And the conclusion that just came out right in the middle of this Alaska door blowing out is that they're doing some things different, but not enough. Someone stated, I thought it was dead on, that Boeing is changing just enough to remain the same. And the New York Times just reported that in an FAA audit just done at the assembly factory, that there were some 33 non-compliant issues out of some 80. I mean, if you're batting, you know, 30% failure in assembly or conformity with the procedures, we've got a real problem here. And there are great workers. You mentioned the whistleblower who tragically we lost.
Yeah.
And our thoughts and prayers go out to the family. There was someone who had courage enough, and there are several out there, and there's more and more every day, to say, hey, this is what I saw. I told them, and I was not only there was not only retribution, but isolation, but actual contempt for someone calling out a safety issue. And I tell you, as a captain on this airplane, and I told you over 30 years of flying,
yeah,
the last thing I need in my cockpit is a yes man. I need someone to call out, hey, I don't know if we're doing this right. It's a safety culture. It's
thank
how
you.
We keep the airplane flying safely.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And that's by the listen, I'm a business person. I believe that's the way any business should run. That's the way we try and do this newscast as we're preparing it. Are there mistakes? What did I screw up? What did I forget? What did I get wrong? What can I fix? What did I overstate? What did I understate? You do that, whether it's with a plane or preparing a newscast or anything else. I can't understand why you would cut corners on something like that. By the way, you mentioned the Alaska Airlines situation. From what I've been reading, it looks like they were really lucky in that situation that, A, that one kid didn't get thrown out the window because apparently the pressure loss or whatever you guys or experts can probably describe better than me, ripped his shirt off, and his mother was holding on to him to keep him from flying out of the hole that was left by the door being flown out. And they say that plane easily from that situation could have been brought down. Wow. Can you take us through that whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And you call it, is it luck? Some have called it a miracle. You know, it was a miracle. I forget the issue. It was described as a miracle, and now here's another one. I mean, we've got to stop counting on luck and miracles. Luck and miracles don't keep airplanes flying safely. And you nailed it. On that Alaska flight, if that had happened at a higher altitude or the door when it ripped off had hit the tail, you don't have to be a pilot to understand if it ripped back the tail, that aircraft is probably going down. If it happened at a higher altitude, every square inch of pressure is exiting the airplane when it exploded. That airplane exploded. It came out of one area. And let's talk about what those pilots went through and the heroic efforts, the training that was executed. Two, not just one, but two trained and experienced pilots doing what they were trained to do and executing that. That airplane took off, and as it climbed through nearly 16,000 feet, it exploded. The door came off. Mm. Pilots didn't know what was going on. Headsets are ripped off the pilots. Shirts are ripped off passengers. They have alerts going off, the cabin pressure alert. At that moment, we have memorized procedures. I know it. I'm going to training, annual recurrent training next week. I will practice this again. Because when the proverbial stuff hits the fan, you've got to be, they say, you fight as you train. We train this way. So these pilots took this airplane within 1 minute of the airplane exploding and losing all the pressure. By the way, that pressure's gone. That means that it's not sustainable air for people to breathe. The mass dropped down. That's 12 minutes of oxygen in those masks. The pilots are putting on their masks. You played a clip, and I can tell that the captain is speaking through the mask because of the tonal on it. Bottom line, within 1 minute, they've got that airplane pointed to death, pointed back into survivable air. And within 4 minutes of the explosion, they are back down to 10,000 feet or lower, where passengers can take off the mask. And then within 14 minutes, I believe it was, that airplane was on the ground. What we train for, but there's no way Boeing should be placing these unforced errors into my cockpit.
Thank you, Captain, for taking us through that and for being so so honest about a situation that we all should be looking into and hopefully gets remedied sometime soon. Captain Dennis Tager, thank you, sir, for your time. Before I go, I want to remind you of our mission here. It's simple, really. I want to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. They're everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.